All right, so with that, we're starting a new sermon series this morning, and it's what I'm calling The Heart of the Matter. And we're going to be interacting with some of the stories about King David in the Hebrew Scriptures, just to reflect a little bit on what it means to live lives of integrity. So we'll be looking at some of the stories of his triumphs, as well as some of his failures, because he certainly had some of those. And so what I considered what might be just a fun or helpful text for us to start out was one that I kept coming back to, and it's one of the most well-known stories in the Bible, right? So even if you don't come from a faith background, you're probably at least somewhat familiar with the story of David and Goliath. And so I think there's some details in that story that might be able to help us talk about a few things, about leadership and influence, if you're a person who's in a place of leadership. I think it can talk to us a little bit about operating in faith over fear. I think it can talk to us about just being true to how God created us and not try to be something or someone that we're not. Because integrity starts with being able to bring your full self to the table, at least where it's safe to do so, right? So I trust that you probably know most of the story or at least have some outline of it, and we'll read a little bit of it later. But I just want to give a brief recap to just bring us up to where I want to start, just in case you're not familiar with it. So I'll often start stories like this a long time ago, in a land far, far away, there was a wartime standoff between two armies, right? And so one army was camped out at the top of one hill, and then there was a big valley, and on the hill across, there was another army that was camped out. And it was the Israelites' enemies. So the Israelites were on one side, and their enemies, the Philistines, were on the other, and these two groups are at a standstill. And it would have been costly, probably suicidal, for either of those armies to make a move toward each other, because it would have required the soldiers to go down a hill, across an exposed valley, and then up the hill to where an enemy was, right? So you can see that give them a tactical advantage. You don't want to be the one that's making that move. And so the Philistines decided on this strategy that was pretty common in the ancient world, right? They said, we'll send our best warrior into the valley to challenge the best warrior that the Israelites could muster, right? One-on-one, mano-a-mano. And so the Philistines sent a man called Goliath, who was recorded to be about 8 feet tall. Now, some scholars think that maybe he had like an issue with his pituitary gland that caused him to grow so tall. Others think that maybe the text wasn't actually trying to be precise, but sort of exaggerating to let us know that he was enormous. But regardless, he was terrifying. And so Goliath had a giant bronze helmet on his head, and then he had bronze armor on his body, and it was armor that probably looked like dragon scales, right? The torso armor alone was estimated to weigh about 125 pounds, which I haven't weighed in a while, but I mean, that's pretty heavy. He had bronze on his legs, he carried a big, thick bronze spear, he had a javelin, and he had a sword, and then he had a shield bearer beside him who carried the shield for him. And so for 40 days, we're told that Goliath came down there and he called out for the Israelites to send their best man to challenge him, but nobody was brave enough to fight. Then one day, there's a young shepherd boy called David, and he went over to visit his brothers who were among those who were fighting for the Israelites. And so he left the sheep that he was tending, and then we're told that he brought some grain and some bread to his siblings, and he had some cheese for their commander. And so when he arrived at the army camp, he left his gear with the keeper of the gear, and then he went to the front line to just talk to his brothers and make sure that they were well and give them their bread. And as he's speaking to them, Goliath comes down the hill and he repeats his challenge to the Israelites. He says, choose a man and let him come down to me. And so David, we know, heard Goliath's challenge and immediately was like, yeah, I'll fight. So 1 Samuel 17 says, then Saul, who was the king of the Israelites, he took David, and he gave him like his own personal battle garb. Right? And so David put on the bronze helmet, and he placed the armor on his body, and he took the sword, and he took the belt, and when he fastened the belt, he couldn't even walk. Ancient armies had three kinds of fighters. They had cavalry, infantry, and projectile warriors. Right? So the cavalry rode on horseback. Goliath was the second sort. Right? He's an infantryman. These were the ground fighters. These were the ones that had swords and shields and spears and javelins and armor. Infantrymen were fierce against cavalry and against other infantry, but not so much against projectile warriors. So David was a projectile warrior, right? The archers and the slingers. These were men who used a slingshot to very good effect. In the book of Judges, we're actually told that the slingers could aim within a hair's breadth of their target. Good, accurate slingers were actually critical to ancient battle strategy. I was reading up a little bit this week, and I found an article in National Geographic that was talking about the Roman slingers. And it was said that they could kill a target that was smaller than a human up to 130 yards away. So if you think like 1.5 football fields, there are some sources that say up to 200 yards. So old Irish slingers were said to be able to hit birds that were actually flying in the air as they were flying. So David seems to be a slinger of this kind of skill level. And they didn't wear heavy armor. So David removed the armor that the king had put on him. So David took his shepherding staff with him in one hand, his slingshot in the other. He picked up 5 smooth stones from a nearby creek, put them in his pouch, then he ran down the hill at Goliath. And Goliath saw him, and he clocked that he was a boy. Right? It says he was a lad, probably a teenager. It says, and he despised him, and he mocked him. Am I a dog that you should come at me with sticks? I curse you. Come to me so I can feed your flesh to the birds and the beasts, he said. And then David yells back, okay, you come at me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, whom you insulted. So today I'm going to strike you down, and I'm going to give your corpse to the birds, and the earth is going to know that it's not by sword or spear that the Lord delivers. And so Goliath, the large infantry man, he tells David, the young lad, to come to him, and he's expecting, it seems, for David to fight like any other infantryman. King Saul had tried to outfit him like one. And so Goliath anticipated that David would come, and he would stand in front of him, and he would draw a sword. And it's a little bit speculative, but David may well have brought that shepherding stick with him as a decoy, right? So he's running down the hill, and he thinks, if I can just trick him long enough to think this is a sword or something I'm going to come at him with, he's not even going to know what hit him. And I think that's why Goliath yells, am I a dog that you would come at me with sticks? I think he really doesn't understand what is about to happen. All right, so David's running down the hill. He reaches into his pouch. He pulls out a smooth stone, puts it in his sling. Then he whips it in circles, probably 6 or 7 revolutions per second, and then lets it rip. If you remember your science, force is mass velocity squared. Remember, they taught me that I took a self-defense course in college, like a self-defense for women, and they were like, just remember, faster is more force. I'm not fast. It didn't help. But I am what I am. They estimate that stone would have hit Goliath with the stopping power of a bullet from an average handgun. And so it sank into his forehead, and that giant fell face first to the ground, and the Philistines fled into the hills, running away from Saul's army. So there's a couple things that I just want to pull out from this story for us this morning. First, I want us to just look at Saul. Right, we're told a little bit earlier in the scripture, in 1 Samuel 9:2, says there was not a man among the Israelites more handsome than he, and he stood a head and shoulders above everyone else. Right? So we've got this man who's a king, a leader, and he stands head and shoulders above everybody else in the nation. And this guy probably would have had the best chance of any of the other infantrymen to stand and to defeat Goliath in hand-to-hand combat, just based on size and experience. And yet, he cowers, and he leads out of fear. Right? We are very clearly told that Saul heard Goliath and all of Israel with him, and they were dismayed and very frightened. Right? Fear is contagious. I came across a study some years ago from Rice University. It was talking about how humans smell fear. Right, that we emit chemicals in our sweat when we're scared. And so the psychologists that were conducting these studies think that that contributes to what they call like emotional contagion in dense crowds, like when we're sort of mimicking each other's emotions in a big mob. And that's maybe that's part of our herding instinct, right? So that when a few people in a crowd get scared, others smell it. And it's for defense, but it can really heighten the fear of a crowd. And so I look at this and I think, you know, Saul is really just leading from his fear, and he's leaking it out all over. And so he has a fearful army. And then this guy David walks up, filled with faith that God is going to defend his people. And I thought, what a contrast. And when David hears Goliath's challenge, it's like he just knows. He's like, I know. I can do this. I've got this. It was a faith-filled gut knowing, but it wasn't just faith that gave him confidence, right? He was also competent. Right? This wasn't like somebody without any kind of experience who just was like having these grandiose ideas of being a hero. Right? This was a young shepherd who, when he volunteered to fight Goliath, the king had initially said, okay, so why should I let you fight? You're young. And this is what he says in 1 Samuel 17. David says to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. Whenever a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock, I went after it and struck it down, rescuing the lamb from its mouth. I mean, that's pretty intense. And if it turned against me, I would catch it by the jaw and strike it down and kill it. Your servant has killed both lions and bears, and this Philistine shall just be like one of them, since he's defied the armies of the living God. And then David said, the Lord who saved me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will save me from the hand of the Philistine. And so Saul said to David, go, may the Lord be with you. All right, so David was not only capable, he was competent in some unexpected ways that gave him an advantage. Right, everybody around David looked at Goliath, and they just saw muscle, right? They saw the, is it WWE now? I don't know. They saw stature and strength and power. But David understood that strength and power can come in other forms, right? Ones that we might not expect. And so as a projectile warrior, he knew that he could be quick, and he knew that he could maneuver in ways that Goliath wouldn't be able to. And he was also clever, because I think he knew that he could trick Goliath into thinking that he was planning to fight with that staff long enough to load that stone into his sling before the shield bearer could even react to it. And David had confidence that God was going to come through for him. Right? And that was a real contrast to the king who, while competent in fighting, had absolutely no faith in his own ability to outmaneuver Goliath. King Saul was so faint-hearted that he was more than willing to put a child out in front of this belligerent soldier instead of finding his own courage to do it himself. And it gives me kind of like no respect for him. Like, oh, sure, I'll let you go do that. And when I was thinking about who might remind me of David today, I often think of Ukraine's president, Zelensky. Right? That guy, he was not a soldier, I don't think, but a comedian by trade. And yet there seems to be this sort of resilience that he's honed over the years as a comedian, where he can read people, he can look at situations a little bit differently, maybe find the humor in it, find some resilience. And he's just out there with his people in the muck and the mess. And I think, you know, there's a certain moral authority that you have when you're defending your people, no matter how you feel about that situation. It's like, if you're attacked, there's a moral authority with saying, no, I'm going to defend my people. And so I look at him and I see a similar sort of, you know, scrappiness in what I see in David. You know, David knows he's quick, he knows he's clever, he's down there in the mess with the army, and just he's fearless. And I think the key here is that he didn't allow himself to be made into someone that he wasn't. Right? He didn't let himself be made into someone that he wasn't. Saul wanted to make him into an infantryman, and David just said, no, that is not who I am. I'm not used to this armor. I'm not going to wear it. This isn't how I lead. This isn't how I do things. And so he had faith that God was just going to come through for him in a way that was true to who he was. And so I think if there's a real lesson in the story for the ages there, it's that God will use us how we are, and we don't need to be somebody else. I also think that it's interesting that in the text we see David divesting himself of things as he moves toward facing Goliath. Right? In the story, we're first told that David leaves his sheep in the care of a shepherd before he went to the battle lines. Right? So he kind of took his responsibility and made sure somebody else was taking care of it. And then he leaves his stuff with the keeper of the gear at the army camp. And then presumably he gives away the grain and the bread and the cheese with the people for whom he intended them. And then he sheds Saul's armor. And so he sheds things. And I think this is done in part for the storytelling, right? It's compelling to have a young man with nothing more than a sling and a staff go slay a giant. That's a great story. But it might also be suggesting something more. And perhaps when God gives us faith to do something difficult, that we lay down our excuses, right? Maybe all those things that would keep us from doing the thing of being who we are, being confident in the skills that we've honed, and just putting our faith in God. And so when David went out there, he went out there fully himself. When I started thinking about divesting extra things that hold us back, it's an imperfect story, but it made me think of our cat, because everything makes me think of our cat, Obadiah. Obadiah! Obi-Swan Kenobi, for those of you who don't know, it's our little cat. We got him 4 years ago. I can't believe it was that long. But he spent the first 3 years of his life living on the street, right? He is a wild man. That's what we use the word. He is a wild man. And he's also lovely, and he's kind of polite. He's one of those guys, he's never gotten like on our counters or our table. Like, I don't know. He's a weird little guy. We would love him to be an indoor cat, but you can't keep him inside. He will not allow it. So when we got him, obviously we needed to get him a collar if he was going outside. So he almost immediately ditched that collar. So I bought him another. He ditched that one too. I was like, okay, I need to get him a different style. Also gone. Went through a few styles. Then I got him a little bell because he was killing a bunch of animals and I wanted to give them a fighting chance. No, faster than any of the others. Gone. He's just like, no, you cannot, you can't hold me back. Then I went and I bought an Apple Tag, which is a little bit heavy for a cat his size, but I put that on him because I was like, I want to know your territory. Just so if you don't come home one night, I want to at least know where to look, right? And so that worked for a while. He did eventually ditch that Apple Tag. It was still pinging as of last summer, and I still couldn't find it. I have no idea what he did with it. I was like, man, that cat. I went on to Chewy.com, and I counted the number of collars that we ordered in those just the first few months. 10. 10 collars. We did finally get him to where he is wearing one. It must be comfortable enough or something. He can't get it off now. But, which is why it's an imperfect story, because he divested of his collars, but, you know, he has to wear one. But it just felt like he was like, Moms, you cannot hold me back. I got patrolling to do. I got hunting to do. There's mice out here, and you are just loading me up with stuff that's keeping me from doing my job, and I am a wild man. You got to let me be me to the best of my ability. That's Obi. Right? So I think that is the ultimate takeaway here from David and Goliath. Integrity means knowing the gifts God's given you, even if you're a little patroller, honing those gifts, not trying to do or to be something that you're not, not letting the Goliaths of the world minimize your worth, walking in confidence that God created you to offer your small piece to the human community, and to do that in faith, knowing that God is at your side. And it doesn't mean that you won't make mistakes. Doesn't mean you won't fall on your face now and again. I certainly have. I imagine David probably had some close calls fighting lions and tigers and bears. But the story encourages us. It says, fear not. You're not alone. The Lord is with you. Fear not. Do not let people despise you and dismiss you. Fear not. Be yourself. You're enough. In fact, you're more than enough. Story tells us it doesn't matter what your age is, doesn't matter what your background is, doesn't matter anything about you. God can take a willing heart and something as small as a little stone picked up from a creek to expand God's good realm on earth. Our God is the kind of God who slays giants and multiplies bread and loaves from 5 loaves of bread and 2 little fishes. So make the most of the skills you have and stand in your integrity because that is your strength. Amen. All right, so for our meditation, we often will have a little either silence or guided meditation. People make noise, a little noise is fine. What I thought I would do is just offer us to meditate on one line from Isaiah 41. And that line is, so do not fear, for I am with you. And so if that's helpful to you, maybe on the in-breath, so do not fear, on the out-breath, for I am with you. And we'll just do that for a minute or two, and I'll let you know when the time's up. So do not fear, for I am with you. come what may, no matter what is going on in our lives, the Lord is at our side. So Lord, may we be aware of your presence alongside us as we're going through our week. May we be aware of you in the sort of just the messiness of life when we're at work, when we're getting kids ready for school, when we're out there playing soccer, or whatever we do. We have just a greater awareness of your presence with us, and also just a sense that we are okay with you, just as we are. We ask that we would just have a confidence in knowing that you're with us and that there's nothing that we can do that would keep you from loving us and from being near us. Amen.